Differently brained shares the opinions of individuals and does not consider your personal circumstances. Differently brained exists purely for information purposes and should not be relied on as health or medical advice. Because no brain is the same, please consult your healthcare professional for your personal medical needs.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Differently Brained, the podcast where no brain is the same. I'm Jacinta Dietrich.
And I'm Lachlan Rutherford.
Large pause in between your name.
Yeah, I had to remember. Today we're going to be having a bit of a chat together, you and I, Jacinta, about the ADHD Senate inquiry.
Yeah, boy.
Issue that is definitely on your radar and should be on everyone's radar, really. I don't know a lot about it, so I thought I'd ask you a couple of questions to figure it out, you know?
I'm here to help. Just putting it out there, I am by no means an expert, a professional, a wise woman of anything, so bear with my poor research and weird answers. I will also mention that today Sirius has joined the recording, so if you hear any super weird clicking in the background, poor little man is in the cone of shame, so please forgive us any weird interruptions because he will not leave me alone.
By the way, Sirius is a dog. He's not just some...
Nailed it. Sirius is my boyfriend. He's in the cone of shame. No, he's my dog.
All right. Killing it. Well, okay. How about you tell me and to the dear audience to begin with a little bit about ADHD for the, I guess, the uninitiated. And obviously there's people who are going to be listening who are like, yeah, I know this inside and out, but that's not for them. This is for me. What is, can you give me like a brief rundown on ADHD? And also, like, I read in the document, the inquiry, but there are several different types. Could you maybe go through those types, please?
Indeed. So there are three different types of ADHD. So there's inattentive, hyperactive, and combination. I'm lucky enough to have a combination, but basically inattentive means that a person is obviously easily distractible, or it's hard to focus on one thing at a time, but they aren't necessarily hyperactive or impulsive.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's kind of obvious in the names, but hyperactive is impulsive, and hyperactive basically meaning that, you know, there's a lot of focus but on a lot of different things. There's a lot of different ideas and switching and changing and doing things all quick, fast, fast. And combination is a delightful mix of the two. So you get all of it where, you know, things won't hold your attention unless you really, really care about them. You impulsively decide things or go off and start a new hobby that you definitely don't need to start and things like that. So one of the things for me is that it's not a lack of focus or attention. It's just that I feel like I can't choose where my focus is.
Mm-hmm.
So I know there's like 50 million things I need to do, but my brain only wants to focus on the one thing that makes me happy and most of them gives it dopamine, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But of course, that one thing isn't always like, you know, the job that you have to do on that day, whether it's work or home or anything like that. So mm-hmm. it feels like an abundance of attention to me.
Just very, very
just
focused.
Not directed.
Yeah. It's interesting though, because a lot of the things that you mentioned, like the impulsivity and also distractibility and all that kind of stuff, that I'm sure, well, for me at least, a person who does not have ADHD, there's some overlaps there with what I've got going on. I'm guessing as a result of that, there'd be like some situations where people are getting diagnosed with, I guess, well, depression or whatever, when they're actually, they have ADHD. Is that the case?
I'm not entirely sure. I know personally, so I'm obviously, we've talked about, I'm autistic with ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to my psychiatrist about it at length because it just interests me so much of what the boundary is or the Venn diagram between my autism and ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, they're very intertwined. So a lot of it for me is, you know, that I start projects and I don't finish them, that I get ideas, I run headlong into them. And then when I hit my first barrier or boundary, I don't have the motivation to keep going past a boundary, because the minute I hit the boundary, the dopamine stops. Yep. And I stop being interested in it. So I think there are a lot of overlaps between ADHD and bipolar as well, in some areas. So I think it is just that we still don't know much about the brain at all. Mm. And obviously there's going to be overlaps and different things, just in the same way that, like, you know, neurotypical brains have overlaps and similarities.
Sure, but,
yeah. I'm not really sure about overlaps and misdiagnosis and stuff. I'm sure it happens.
Yeah.
If people want to tell us their story, hit me up.
Yes, for sure. This is a statistics question. Get ready for the fun.
I love stats.
Do you actually?
Sometimes. I love stats in that, like, when someone else tells me. I don't like figuring out stats.
Oh, yeah.
But I like looking at them.
I like seeing a number that someone's compartmentalized and like, yes, that is digestible.
I can't remember what it is on Instagram, but if you're not following the ABS stats that are genuinely very funny on Instagram, 100%, I'll link it in the show notes. It's so funny. It's census stats, but compared to, like, dumb stuff, or put in a fun way. I don't know. I like it.
Could you tell me, person who has read the report, some people haven't, how many ADHDers are there in Australia? And could you put that in a fun stats way?
I could give it a crack. So apparently, so Australia doesn't directly track the number of ADHD diagnoses made, which that surprised me. I didn't know that, but I guess given that it's not covered by NDIS, they just don't give a shit.
Mm.
But it's estimated that there's about 800,000 people in Australia that have ADHD, which is about 1 in 20 Australians,
right,
which is about, they're saying, 2.8% of adults, but the vast majority aren't formally diagnosed. So whether that's that they don't know, that they've been misdiagnosed, that they self-identify, there's a lot of different things. Mm. But yeah, apparently it's about 1 in 20 Australians.
Right.
Which, that surprised me. I wasn't expecting it to be that high.
It's
probably higher than that and we just don't know.
Well, that's it, yeah. Well, it's like, I guess, same with statistics on people with depression. It's what, 1 in 4 people or 1 in 10 people have depression or something like that. Don't quote me on that, please, everyone. But like, that wouldn't have really been a statistic that was followed that much 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah. So of that 2.5 to 2.8% of adults who do have ADHD, only 0.2% are being treated.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. So even if you, well, I don't know how many of those are diagnosed and not seeking treatment or didn't feel they needed it, but that's a pretty big gap.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge gap.
And I'm guessing as well that has something to do with the fact that there would be costs involved in treating ADHD and diagnosing ADHD and, you know, costs on the wider society and that kind of thing. Do you know what the cost is? I mean, you would because you have it, but do you, what's the cost for the individual?
Mate, so I think there's a lot of layers to the cost, and I think that this is potentially, some people aren't going to love this answer because I'll get into it and you'll see why. There's obviously, like, the immediate costs that spring to mind. So, like, medication, diagnosis, assessment, psych appointments, general care, potentially OT appointments. And that's if you are diagnosed and seeking support and things like that. So there's the obvious one straight off the bat of getting your identity confirmed and then finding ways to support that. Then there's the next layer down, which I think people are semi-familiar with, but I think that it's not as, like, thought about. Like, you know, it's the people who already have NDIS packages that maybe you would think have these costs, but everyone does. So it's, you know, potentially having a house cleaner because stuff gets too out of hand too quickly or you physically can't do it. It's, you know, having a meal delivery service because grocery shopping is just too hard for you, or you simply can't do any other way of getting your meals and things like that. There's those daily things that I think people are going to groan about because they're seen as lifestyle things. But at the end of the day, like, without these things, your quality of life can go to absolute shit when you have ADHD or a different neurodiversity or mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand why people do grow to moan about it, because we do live in a shitty capitalist society, but also I think people need to get around the idea that, you know, we all need different support. And if the support that I need is that somebody helps me with my meals or takes me grocery shopping or I get them delivered in a box, shut up. Someone should help me with that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also I'm now sounding like a gross capitalist when I say this, but that's a job being provided for someone to be the provider. Yeah.
And then there's an extra layer, which I think, you know, neurodivergent people will definitely relate to and other people will not get, but it's spoken about as like an ADHD tax, which I genuinely think is more of a like neurodivergent tax, because I know non-ADHDers, like autistics and things like that, who have these similar issues, and it's costs like wasted money on groceries because you forgot that food was in the fridge and that it's going to go off. It's late fees for bills, or in my case, library books. It's parking fines because you have time blindness and you completely forgot what time it was. It's these incidental financial penalties because of executive dysfunction, time blindness, inattentiveness, that it is just so hard to keep our brains on track and be aware of all of these things that inevitably something's going to slip through.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't have that extra support. So yeah, I feel like there's kind of three levels of cost to the individual or the family or household. And it's only the top one that people really think about, but it's the bottom two that need the funding and support and skills and that are really being ignored and impacting our quality of life.
Yeah. And then what about the cost to, this is such a bad way of phrasing this question, so forgive me, but what about the cost of the community at large? Like, if there are people who have ADHD, for example, in a workplace who aren't able to focus on the task that they're given or whatever, and that then disrupts the workflow and that kind of thing, there would be a cost involved with that for the workplace.
Correct. Because, you know, everybody's been banging on about the economy since forever. I figured, why not go and find the stats on that stuff?
Yeah.
So I did. It is a little dated now. It's a 2019 Deloitte Access Economics report. But apparently ADHD directly costs the Australian economy $12.83 billion a year.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. That's not bad.
Which I don't like, the budget's just come out, but I haven't sorted myself out. I really should have checked how much funding the NDIS got in this budget to see.
We'll put an addendum in the show notes or something.
We will, thank you. Correct. But yeah, $12.83 billion a year. And that's because obviously a lot of different things, but they're estimating that $10.2 billion of it was because ADHD people took more days off due to illness and burnout and things like that. And they were less productive because of their symptoms, characteristics, traits, and of working in a society and workplaces that don't cater to us, that don't support us, that don't accommodate us.
Yeah.
So not only are we costing the economy billions of dollars, but we're also significantly, obviously, more likely to not receive the treatment that we need, which also leads to a higher rate of road accidents, a higher rate of accidental injuries, increasing healthcare costs, which, you know, up until now you could mostly probably bulk bill. So we were costing you because we're struggling. Get out of here. We're also substantially overrepresented in the Australian prison system because, again, we're not getting the treatment and medication that we deserve. And fun one, people with ADHD are more than twice as likely to attempt suicide and six times more likely to be successful.
Oh, fuck. Oh, jeez. I will. I do want to ask, and I know the answer to this already, but what support or care is offered to people who have ADHD?
This one's really a lived experience answer. So, like, I could have done more research and looked into it to be more supportive and more optimistic and been like, here are all the resources. But from my personal experience of having ADHD confirmed for a couple of years now, it is almost nothing. The just general understanding is still very limited. So my family is obviously doing the absolute best they can. But beyond my family circle, there is still a lot of misunderstanding and difficulties there, and people don't really know how to help me in terms of, like, I'm medicated, but apart from that, I don't have access to any other strategies or supports that could help me to implement anything new. I don't have the finances to do it myself. So a lot of the stuff that I mentioned in, like, the second layer of costs, which, like, the cleaner and the meal prep and stuff like that, I don't have access to that because I can't fund it. And the NDIS does not count ADHD as a primary disability, even though it is a disability in the Disability Discrimination Act.
Yeah.
Even though it's in there, you can piss off because apparently your situation isn't serious enough, even though, as we just stated, we cost billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Which, if you just funded the NDIS correctly, which they don't, we could put that all back in because we can do things. Anyway, this got rantier than I expected, but yeah, there are obviously a lot of ADHD awareness organizations and organizations that try and offer support, but in terms of practical day-to-day accessible stuff, for me, it's been almost nothing. It's family support, it's friends doing what they can, it's sacrificing something else on a certain week because I physically can't feed myself if I don't do takeaway and I just have to. It's doing all the bits and pieces in between to make it happen yourself because there's no support anywhere else.
Pivoting to the actual Senate inquiry, Jacinta, could you please enlighten our audience as to what the ADHD Senate inquiry is?
I can. So I'm obviously not like a politician, so digging into all of the words and things has been a bit overwhelming. But essentially, it's an inquiry into the barriers around assessment and support for people with ADHD. So it's looking at the access to diagnosis, the supports after diagnosis, the availability, training and attitudes of like practitioners and the people that you would go to for a diagnosis. It's looking at wait times and the cost of, you know, not only assessment, but the follow-up things like medication, which can obviously be very expensive and still very stigmatized because of what they are. It's looking at the NDIS and how we are not covered in the NDIS. We are not recognized as having a primary disability, which 100% we should. It's the funding allocated towards ADHD research. It's the economic costs that I talked about earlier. It's looking at international best practice of what other countries are doing, because in my research, it showed that Australia is really lagging in this. So not only are we incredibly underdiagnosed considering the statistics that they believe, but as I also said, we're undertreated, undersupported, underfunded, just under everything. So it's looking at all of those barriers from the very, very start of trying to get a diagnosis all the way through to the support that you get afterwards and the ongoing support that ADHD people deserve to have the quality of life that we need.
Yeah. How did this report come about?
Oh, I've got a sketchy answer for this one because I'm not super across this exactly, but we will be having a special guest on in a few months to fill us in on. My understanding is that the Australian Greens have been campaigning around an ADHD Senate inquiry for quite a while, and they did a survey in October to have a look at the community's experience in the healthcare system, you know, where the barriers are, where the gaps are, and what needed to be looked into. The survey got more than 10,000 responses, and Senator Jordan Steele-John said the results were confronting to say the least, and that it was consistently that a large proportion of people shared issues with costs, wait times, and stigmas from healthcare professionals. Which I think that anecdotally, that has come through our podcast and through the people who reach out to us all the time. So it's been a big push from the Australian Greens to actually have a look at why our society, why our community is not doing right by ADHD people.
So Why is this so important? Why should I care?
Amazing, thank you. You should care because we're fucking people too, Lachlan. Jesus.
Oh, shit, you're right.
I think from so many angles, there's so many reasons to care. I think, you know, 1 in 20 is a huge statistic. The likelihood that you know someone who is either diagnosed or undiagnosed with ADHD is high.
Mm.
And if there was a way for them to get identified and get supports and have a better quality of life, how could you not want that? How could you look at that person and say, no, you're doing fine, keep pushing, keep burning out, keep doing it? There are still so many barriers and so many people that are struggling, whether they know it or not, that this is well overdue. It is ridiculous to me still that ADHD is treated as something that only little boys get and you grow out of it. It's got very similar misconceptions and stigmas as autism. And if you don't want to look at it from an individual level, if you don't want to look at it at a quality of life level, fine, go back to the economic statistics from the start, because at the end of the day, the amount that neurodivergent people in general can contribute to society, if we are given the support and the accommodations that we need, we could be killing it. Mm. Like, we don't choose to cost the economy, or however you want to phrase it, because we're not out there trying to destroy money or anything. Like, I don't know, maybe some of us are, but at the end of the day, like, it's more jobs, it's more support, it's that we could be in fields that are good for us, that we could be putting that money back into society instead of draining it as people appear to think. So whether you look at it from what I would consider the empathetic, normal human way or the capitalist, right, yucky nonsense way, like, there's, what's the downside? At the end of the day, unless, like, you could easily just put that $10 billion into the NDIS, make it a primary disability and see what happens, because that's the loss that you're at now. Why wouldn't you just try?
You know what I find really interesting as well is, like, all of the guests we've had in the past who have had, you know, things like depression or autism, that kind of thing, we've talked about stigma and that there has been a move towards destigmatizing certain mental illnesses and neurodivergence and that kind of thing, to the point where when someone says to someone who has depression, for example, to just get over it and move along and get on with your life, that's like universally, maybe not universally, but largely seen as a shit thing and the incorrect thing to say. Whereas I can imagine for a person with ADHD who would say something like, I can't physically do this thing because my brain is preventing me because I have executive dysfunction at the moment. And people would say, just fucking do it. Just get over it, man. Like, has that been the case for you? Have you had that?
I've never had anyone say it to me like that, thankfully. I've had a lot of internalized stigma around that. So I know that people think or have thought that I'm lazy, that I'm choosing not to do something, that I'm just doing the fun parts of whatever. Because in my household, I don't do the majority of the cooking and cleaning. And so I know a lot of people think that Lucas is whipped or that I'm forcing him to do all this stuff because they don't recognize what I bring to the relationship instead, because they don't see all of it. They just see kind of the physical side of things. So
also, it's none of their business, but anyway.
I've never had anyone say it to me, but I have seen people. You can tell from their facial expression, they're thinking, just do it, just work harder, just do more, just be different. And I know people who've had things like that said to them. You know, you just need more focus. You're just being lazy. If you really wanted to do it, you would. That's an excuse. What a cop-out, stuff like that. But I think you're right. It's incredibly, it's still very normal to say to someone with ADHD or a neurodivergent person.
Yeah. So, in regards to the Senate inquiry, why do you think people should make a, I mean, it's a no-brainer question. You kind of already answered it, but why do you think that people should make a submission to this inquiry?
I think the biggest thing is because there's power in numbers. So like the survey that the Australian Greens did, when you put it in such big numbers and you can see the data and it is not one person saying this one thing, but it's thousands of people saying the same thing. There's no denying it. Like, it's just straight there. I think everyone deserves to be able to share their story and their experience and to be heard at the end of the day. Like, you know, the majority of people voted for this government and we deserve to have them look at our stories, look at our experiences, look at our situation and do something about it. I think the more that we can make pressure and demands as a group, the more likely we are to see change. And I think it's important that, you know, we've been given an opportunity that doesn't sadly come about all that often to try and make a difference and to try and make the quality of our lives and, you know, the lives of other ADHD and wider neurodivergent people better, because it starts the ball rolling. Like, you know, you change this thing and then you change another thing. And I know it feels small, but that's why we need as many people as possible to put in submissions so that it feels big.
Yeah.
Also, this is the healthcare system that you're going to be in for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Like, diagnosed or not, you are going to come across medical practitioners. You are going to come across people who've been trained potentially to think a certain thing about your brain. Do you want them to have the best training they can have? Do you want less stigma in the situation? Like, I know this all sounds like so much personal responsibility, and I know that that's a lot, but that's why I want to encourage so many people to do a submission so that it isn't so much a personal responsibility. So that, you know, that weight can be lifted off our shoulders, because it shouldn't be on us to fight for our quality of life. It should be a given.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, that's not the situation that we're in. And if we have an opportunity to tell Parliament how awful the healthcare system can be, we 100% need to take that.
Mm.
Because if there's any chance to change it, it's worth it.
Yeah. So how would a person make a submission?
Well, of course, it's not necessarily the most neurodivergent friendly process, because why would it be? To be fair, it has been broken down into as few steps as possible, I guess. So there's two ways that you can make a submission. There's the My Parliament portal, or you can send it to the committee directly through email. So I will put all of that in the show notes. The method is completely up to you. The My Parliament portal is probably more secure and confidential, but of course there is also the option of simply emailing it. So you basically write out your submission, which we'll go through in a second, and then shoot it off to them. And either way you do it, you can 100% guarantee it has made it to the right people. And it will be read and considered. If you aren't feeling up to making your own submission, I do know that Yellow Ladybugs are compiling a community submission. So they have a survey, which we'll also link to. It'll take about 15 to 20 minutes. You don't have to answer all the questions. It's really flexible and they've done their best to make it as easy as possible. And so you share your experience and then they're going to collate all of that into one big submission and put that in as well if you don't feel like you can do your own individual one.
Fantastic. So do you have some handy resources for the peeps for making a submission?
I do, because I looked at it and was incredibly overwhelmed and didn't know where to start. I've never made a submission to a parliamentary inquiry. So these are all included in the show notes as well. But the Australian Greens have made a fantastic guide on making a submission. So what to include, how to format it, things like that. There's also a bunch of submission writing workshops going on in different parts of the country. So we'll link a bunch of those as well, which is basically writing workshops, again, taking you through what to include, what order to put it in, what will make it the most effective submission you possibly can. There's, of course, the Yellow Ladybugs collective submission. If it all looks way too overwhelming and you simply can't write your own, and that is totally fair. And there's also Lauren Beckman has made the best Google Doc template I've seen. That's the one I'm using. And it breaks it down so simply into, you know, what to put into your introduction, how to break down your experiences, how to make it just the most explicit and structured submission it can be while not requiring all of the brain power to do it yourself. And it's really, really good if, like me, this is your first time submitting to an inquiry, and also like me, you're stopping and starting and you're doing it in bits and pieces, because as you go through the template, you can do small chunks of it and then, you know, go and do whatever it is that you need to do, or take a break or step away from it because it's, you know, overwhelming and can burn you out and things like that, and then come back to it and know exactly where you were. So that's the one I'm using, and all of those will be linked in the show notes, of course.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I just want to say thank you, Jacinta, for giving us this information today, and also for, you know, doing the research and compiling these resources. Obviously, it's a big task, and a very worthwhile task as well. And thank you for chatting with me about it. Thank you.
Of course. If I had more time, I would tell people to just like call me and I'll transcribe their experiences and do their submissions. But unfortunately, I don't have that time, but I was really tossing up whether I'd offer that. I'm not offering that. I'm so sorry, everyone, but it's just really important to me. So thank you for letting me come on and talk about it and take over a full bonus episode all about my thing. I promise if there's ever a bipolar inquiry, we will 100% or a trick or anxiety, any of those.
But then they're going to research it. Ah.
Thank you for listening to us today. We really hope that it helps you make a submission or even consider making a submission. It's your opportunity to directly communicate with the Parliament about the roadblocks and challenges in the way of people trying to access ADHD assessment and support services. Your lived experience is valuable and it could change lives.
Wonderful. And just want to say as well, I noticed a lot of listeners are currently listening on Apple Podcasts. If you could do us a solid and write a great review for us, it would be lovely. Also, shout out to the Danes for listening to us.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of love from Denmark and Sweden, and a lot of, you know, a few bits and pieces of Europe, but specifically Denmark. Thank you.
Cheers, Denmark.